You're listening to DevOps and Docker Talk, and I am your host, Brett Fisher. In this episode, we have Portainer back on the show with Neil Creswell, the CEO and co-founder, to do a couple of things. One is to just reiterate how many people and how universal of a useful tool for containers that Portainer is. Secondly, we get some updates on new things that have happened in the last couple of years, including adding GitOps support to Portainer, including new features like the ability to deploy Kubernetes nodes and infrastructure. So we do some demos, which if you didn't know, this is a live show. And I usually tell you in this intro that this is an edited version of our weekly live show that you can join on Thursdays at 1 p.m. U.S. Eastern at brett.live. But in this case, we had demos like we do half the time or so. And those demos are only available if you go watch it, because they don't usually make sense in this audio format. So my wonderful editor, Christy, ends up editing out those demos, which you learn from. And in those demos, we did things like deploy microcates. We showed off some of the GitOps features and some of the Edge features, which we get into in this show for things like IoT and Edge, where you might have hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of devices that Portainer can manage for you. There's a lot to Portainer, and it's hard to have an hour-long conversation to even give you the best features or the top list of features, because it really does so much stuff. It manages Docker. It manages Swarm. It manages Compose files. It manages Kubernetes. It manages Nomad. It manages cloud Kubernetes. It deploys Kubernetes. It deploys your apps through regular means as well as through GitOps means. It just solves a whole lot of problems. And in a lot of cases, it's free. So we start off slow, but we get into it pretty quick. And I hope you really enjoyed this conversation with Neil of Portainer. Hello, I've got my friend Neil here with me. Neil Creswell from Portainer, CEO, and awesome dude. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I love coming on your show and talking tech.
Yeah. This is, I think, at least our third time together. We've already even got a fourth one planned. I don't want to spoil the ending, but we're here for Portainer, which has been a topic we've had on this show multiple times. It's hard to go a month or even a week sometimes on this show, especially in the Q&A portion, where we're not bringing up Portainer at some point as an option for managing things, for deploying things. All right, Portainer. Neil, give us the quick origin story that we've heard on the show before, but for those new people that are here that didn't get to watch us the last few times.
Yeah, it changes often because I like to keep the story, even though the story is the same, I like to change it a little bit, otherwise you get bored hearing it. My background, my history has been quite dynamic. I've had so many cool roles. You know, I started out as an engineer, I moved to a consultant, I went to a CTO, I went to a CIO, went to a CEO. So I've had all these different roles, and those roles have exposed me to significant differing dimensions to IT and conflicting priorities. Yeah. How, as an engineer and as a consultant, you can build really cool, amazing things. And then as an executive, how do you gain control or better TCO and ROI and all these other things? It's conflicting priorities. And one of the things that I learned very early on is, yeah, complexity is often a hindrance to many things. It's a hindrance to the adoption of new technology. And complexity is a hindrance to a really, really good total cost of ownership. And complexity is a hindrance to how fast you can recover when things go wrong. And so I've spent most of my career now finding ways as a consultant, as a CIO, now as a CEO, how I can empower amazing capabilities without introducing unnecessary complexity. And that's kind of my overarching vision, is how do I make this thing, this technology, accessible by the masses and minimizing as much complexity as possible. And you know, Portainer started life initially for me to use as a tool for a cloud provider I was running when I wanted to deliver a CAS offering, mm-hmm. Container as a Service. That was in 2016. That's how long, you know, Portainer has been around as a Lisa code based. That was very early. That was when, you know, hardly anyone had any kind of native container offerings. You know, I wanted to deliver a cPanel type experience, but for containers.
cPanel. That's a good, you're going back.
I'm going back.
I know it's still a thing, but I was using cPanel like 25, 20 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. cPanel was just so easy, right? It was an easy way to manage things. It was like, hey, well, how can I have that kind of ease of use while still enabling the underlying technology? Now, obviously, things have evolved dramatically since then. So, you know, no way are we trying to be a cPanel these days. But still, we, yeah, my whole ethos is how can we remove complexity and make the technology significantly easier to initially adopt, to manage, yeah, day zero, day one, and day two. So that's kind of it.
Nice. So one of the challenges I've had is how to talk about it without just saying it does all the things. It does Kubernetes. It manages storage. It manages application deployments. It manages nodes. You can see statistics, and there's just so much to it. And it's hard to figure out where sweet spots are and where I can tell people a specific thing that it does out of the thousand things it does that they would realize, oh, I need this. I need to adopt this right away. So I was curious, like, do you have some common scenarios where people are going, oh, wow, I definitely need to solve that problem. I will check out Portainer for that.
Yeah.
Application deployments? Is it monitoring? Is it like storage or add-ons? Or what really is the area that you see a lot of people liking?
For one, welcome to my marketing problem. And this is completely my own doing, right? So I am not a fan of lots of discrete tooling to manage infrastructure. You know, I cut my teeth in the VMware era. And, you know, VMware became really, really strong once they moved all of their management into the one vCenter engine, and they had all these vCenter plugins, and you could, even though there was a range of discrete tooling, it all plugged into vCenter, and vCenter was your single gateway to manage that world. And I liked that. It was, you learned the one experience, you learned the one tool. And so right from day one, I wanted Portainer to be the one tool you needed. If you had to manage a container platform, I wanted Portainer to be the one tool you needed. I didn't want you to have to go and tab to, or have multiple tabs open to different tools. I wanted Portainer to be the one. So in a way, I've made my own problem because we do everything. That's kind of the strategy.
Yeah.
Where we focus is actually, I would say, day two operations. And the reason being is spinning up a cluster. And for a long time, Portainer was not in the game of spinning up environments for you. We didn't want you to build clusters because that's quite easy. You can swipe a credit card, go to DigitalOcean, go to Sivo, go to any cloud provider, swipe a credit card, and you got yourself a cluster. There's cluster bootstrap tools that will spin you a cluster. And this stuff is quite simple. And it was like, well, can we add value to that? I don't know. So we kind of shied away from that and said, well, spinning up a cluster is great, but what it actually does is get you into trouble quicker. You've spun up this cluster, but now you actually have no real idea how to manage it. And even worse, you've got no idea how to troubleshoot it if something goes wrong. You haven't learned it. So therefore, you can't operate it correctly. And so the whole thing is, well, once you've spun up a cluster, how do you now absorb that? And how do you now manage multiple clusters? How do you take care of user authentication and RBAC and access and all of the hard stuff that comes on day two after you've got a cluster? So our current sweet spot, and we were seeing a lot of pickup in that day two operations. It's taking in environments and centrally managing them, providing a self-service portal for the end user operators or users, DevOps, call them what you like, who log in and want to deploy and manage their applications.
Yeah. And so you, on that topic of deployment, because I mean, you're right, like so often the deployment tools and the management tools are different, and the choices you make in one may have consequences for the thing that you use after that. So we were talking before the call that you had recently added Microkates deployments, like cluster infrastructure deployments as an option. Could we talk about that a little bit? Like, is that the first time that you've done that in terms of being able to deploy infrastructure from within the tool? Or
yeah, we actually purposely said, if people are going to be setting up clusters and environments with bootstrap tools, well, let's just do that for them because why not? If they want to manage them with Portainer, but they want to make it easier to spin up, well, let's just do that for them. So we're like, well, let's start with adding cloud provider environments. So we said, okay, and we started off with, you know, the three challenger brands, you know, Sivo, Linode, and DigitalOcean, because they kind of align to our ethos as a bit of a disruptor or challenger. And then of course it's like, well, actually, The real problem comes when you're looking to Amazon and Azure and Google, because, you know, setting up those clusters is actually quite challenging. So then we added those three as well. So now you can spin up, you know, six cloud provider offerings for all natively from within Portainer. So you can add some credentials, and then from within Portainer, you can say, hey, I want to spin up a GKE cluster or an EKS cluster and fill in some relatively rudimentary detail. And then, you know, next, finished, and you got yourself a cluster. And now you can manage it from Portainer pretty easily. We then said, well, that's all well and good, but there are a lot of people out there who want Kubernetes self-hosted. I'm not going to say on-premises, but that's almost always what that means, but self-hosted. How do we do that? And so we spent a lot of time looking at the Kubernetes distributions out there and saying, well, in all honesty, the best way to run Kubernetes is managed Kubernetes. Yeah, outsource the problem of managing the control plane to somebody else. Well, how do you get close to that self-hosted? And that's where we kind of settled on MicroKS from Canonical, because it's probably the closest, I think, that you can get to no-ops Kubernetes. I mean, there's no such thing as no-ops Kubernetes, but it's the closest you get. And even better, for a relatively low fee, you can go get an Ubuntu Pro subscription, and you've now got a full 9x5 or 27 support agreement with Canonical. So if something breaks, you don't need to struggle. You just get on the phone to Canonical and they'll help you solve the problem with MicroKS. And I thought, that's brilliant. You know, if for on-prem, that's brilliant. And so that's why we decided we'll add support for MicroKS on-prem, spinning up, spinning up clusters. So six cloud providers and MicroKS for on-prem.
Yeah. Yeah. We were also talking before the show about my affinity for MicroKS, because I always felt like checks all the right boxes for me in terms of a Kubernetes self-managed deployment solution. And I mean, obviously we have K3S, we have every cloud, and we have all these heavyweight ones like Rancher and Tanzu and all the other ones. So it always felt like it was the right mixture of making it easy for me to put some of the default plugins in, but not being too opinionated, having the enterprise support option in the background, but also very strong community support. And I've had them on the show before to talk about it, one of the team leads. And I think it's a great product. I teach it in my courses as a great way for setting up small clusters, but I have also deployed MicroKS in data centers for like a financial institution just a couple of years ago, where they decided they didn't really need Rancher, one of the heavyweights. One, they just needed to go with something small, light, simple to upgrade and maintain. And MicroKS solved all those problems for them. So here we are. For Docker Desktop, it is the most popular third-party extension. So for those that have Docker Desktop, you can have all these plugins, they call them extensions. And there's a lot, like, I don't know how many, 89, there's 89 extensions. This idea has only existed for 2 years. And we have, we're getting close to 100 extensions. You're number one, I consider it number one. What do you think people are doing with this? In my case, I would use this maybe on my local machine to manage my Raspberry Pis running MicroKS in the closet. Instead of me running it maybe on that cluster permanently, I could run it locally. Do you think people are using it to manage their own Docker Desktop? As in, it's a better tool for managing Kubernetes and Docker and Swarm on my own machine than it is Docker itself? Is that what they're doing? Do you have any use cases on this?
Yeah, Docker Desktop is pretty raw in some regards. And one of the big benefits, I think, why people would use it is, you can go to stacks. Now, stacks is just our word for compose. You can add a stack and you've got Git repo and you can turn on GitOps. And GitOps is actually, for Docker, it's a very hard thing to do. And so you can all of a sudden get your Docker Desktop instance and you can now have a full GitOps pipeline for your Docker Desktop instance coming back to some central cloud repo. Now, obviously, if you're running Docker Desktop and you're running Kubernetes, well, number one, you've probably got a very, very expensive laptop with lots of memory, because it's ridiculously hungry for memory. But if not, and you're running Docker, well, then if you want to start perfecting the skills in GitOps, then you can just do it in Portainer right now with out of the box. So there's that, but also there's a lot of capability inside Portainer that Docker Desktop just doesn't have, like image up to date indicators. So it's, am I running the latest image? Yes or no? There's a newer version of the image available in the repo and I'm running an out of date image. So it's just a lot of really quick to hand UI features there. And one of the big benefits of Portainer is we make it really easy to discover things, to discover capability. One of the problems with the command line is if you don't know the command to type, then you can't type the command --help to read up about it. Whereas for Tane, you can be clicking around and you can see a bunch of really cool things. And you're like, man, I didn't even know Docker did that. And so you start to experiment with features and capabilities that we might not otherwise have been exposed to if you didn't have a way to graphically see what is possible. And so I think a lot of people are just using Portainer as a way to get easy access to some relatively advanced capabilities.
Yeah. We've got a question really quick asking, the GitOps option sounds interesting. How does it work? And I'm assuming, I think they're talking about, like, does it Git clone? Does it check like GitHub and GitLab APIs? Or I think that's what they're asking.
Yeah, I will explain it, but I'll also point you to our Portainer Academy. So the Portainer Academy has a bunch of training material on how to use Portainer. It also has our reference architectures, which explain in great deal how elements of Portainer work, including Git. So if you really, really want to know how it works, go have a read of the reference architectures or the Academy pages, and then you'll deeply understand how the tech works. But and in a nutshell, Portainer becomes the reconciliation loop engine. So the Portainer server, not the clusters, not the Docker environments out there. Right. And if you think about Argo or these other tools, you know, they each run an agent in all the clusters, and that agent is doing the reconciliation loop. Well, Portainer does the reconciliation loop. It clones the repo, shallow clones the repo into the Portainer server's persistent volume. It grabs the relevant compose files or other files it needs and uses those to deploy the application. It then has a reconciliation loop time that you set, either a reconciliation loop or a webhook, which will force a reconcile. It's then checking against the commit ID and Git and saying, well, I'm running an application with this commit ID. Has the ID changed? Yes. Okay. Then I'm going to go cold again, look for changes and deploy the changes. So it's basically just reconciling against Git and saying, if I see changes, then grab those changes and propagate them to the running environment in real time.
Okay, so you mentioned Compose. So we're talking about GitOps. I know that people, if you're not familiar with GitOps, welcome to the channel. We talk about GitOps a lot. It's one of my favorite things of the 2020s. But this supports a Compose file. Does it support, what else does it support? I'm assuming Kubernetes manifest, Helm charts?
Kubernetes manifests, Helm charts coming soon, but right now Compose files and Kubernetes manifests.
Okay.
So right now this is a Git repo and it's Compose. If I switch to a Kubernetes environment, it would be asking me for a manifest file.
Right. About templating support for these Docker Compose files, I'm assuming that is in the background, is it just using the Compose libraries to, if can you pass it like an override Compose file? Do you know anything about any of those advanced features?
We actually have this feature called mustache variables. And basically inside your Compose file, you can do, you know, the mustache, so bracket, brackets, bracket, bracket. And then at deploy time, so when you reference the file, it'll ask you to actually input the variables. We will substitute those variables at runtime. So you can do that as well if you wanted to. So you can actually have these mustache variables and it's for a kind of rapid replace mechanism. So you can do that. That's more under the app templates, custom templates, where you can actually go and build these and use all of the mustache variables that you need to change things. App templates and custom templates are a bit like an app store for Docker. And we have something similar for Kubernetes as well, based off Helm.
Very cool. I want to just throw in a teaser while we're in the middle of the show. As we're talking about like Docker templating, and we're going to get into some edge stuff, but there's this new project that we're going to have a whole show dedicated to. What's the elevator pitch on K2D?
K2D is interesting. It's a thought experiment at this stage. And I'll basically go only that far. It's a thought experiment that may or may not survive depending on the feedback. And the whole thought experiment behind it is Kubernetes is amazing, right? It's the first time in my career where I've seen a standardized API across anything, right? If you can write to the Kubernetes API in a very consistent language, and that API will translate and run damn near anything anywhere, right? It's amazingly universal, but it's heavy. It's heavy in the current implementation. If you look at even micro K8s, in all honesty, the machines that run micro K8s, if you don't have 2 to 4 gig of RAM, you're kind of kidding yourself. Yeah, the idle consumption, memory consumption of micro K8s is around 700 megabytes. because of the way that Kubernetes works with its clustering, its cluster quorum, it's quite heavy on disk IO. And so unless you have SSDs, you will be burning out, you know, like flashcards in a Raspberry Pi. And the thought experiment with this is, well, if Kubernetes is dominating headspace in the data center and dominating headspace at the edge, well, what happens when you get to the far edge and the far edge devices get very small? We're talking about the compute that's inside a washing machine or a camera, or in a manufacturing standpoint, a small PLC. And these things they're probably even ARM32, but they're one CPU core, quite a slow CPU core. They've probably got a gig of memory at max. Most of them have 512s. How can we still get the benefits of the Kubernetes API consistency when we can't possibly run even the lightest of light Kubernetes distro? And that's KTD. I'm like, well, maybe what we'll do is actually just emulate the Kubernetes API server and translate that in real time to Docker commands, or Podman, but we translate it to Docker commands. So if you can use kubectl, you can use all of your favorite Kubernetes tools, and you can manage these environments as if they're Kubernetes, but they're not Kubernetes at all.
Interesting. That's a teaser for y'all. You're going to have to get on the newsletter to find out when Neil and his team's going to be back, because we're going to do a whole show, maybe some demos about K2D. I will also wait for that time to talk about things like Containerd versus Docker Engine and Docker D for memory and IoT and Edge, but that's for another day. We're going to get into that. But today we're focused on Portainer, which is, I guess maybe at some point it's the common utility that you didn't know you needed if you're not using it yet. And it's across all your environments. Do you have like customers that are choosing to have different environment types like Kubernetes and then some Docker instances alone that are just single instances? Or is everyone sort of like, if there are swarm people, they're swarm people. And if there's Kubernetes people, they do everything in Kubernetes. Is there a lot of people that are just doing it all at the same time? Do you know any of customers?
You know, what's really interesting is almost all of our customers know that they want to get to Kubernetes, right? They all know it. The entire market, everyone's mindset is Kubernetes is the way eventually that we will run our fleets. Most of our customers, though, are saying, knowing that we want to make sure that we have the tooling that will accommodate that idealized end state eventually. But today, our technical capabilities, our fiscal envelope, whatever you want to call it, doesn't allow that to happen. And so we need to start simple with either Docker and, believe it or not, Docker Swarm. And so they're like, we want to start our journey. We want to crawl before we walk, before we run. We want to really get a good understanding of how to manage containers in production on Docker and understand around persistence versus stateless. We want to understand around how you horizontally scale applications. And we want to learn all the stuff first in production, by the way, but on Docker or Docker Swarm. And then once we've mastered that and we believe we have the operational competence and diligence to do it well, then we'll adopt Kubernetes, but we want to stay in the same tool. We don't want to be switching tools after doing that. And so they know that they want to get to Kubernetes. They love the fact that we do it, but they want to start their journey with Docker. And we are seeing customers move through that progression. They start with Docker, and 6 months later, they deploy their first Kubernetes cluster and they move some workloads across. They cut their teeth on that. They get proficient and then they go. And where Portainer's sweet spot is, it's for those organizations that want to consider their journey as opposed to just jump right in. You know, they understand that it's going to be a journey and it's going to take a bit of time, but we can't do nothing. We have to start. And so we want to start simple and we want to move our way up through complexity in line with operational upskilling.
That's similar to a lot of the clients that I've had over the last, ever since I started consulting with Docker almost a decade ago, because there are definitely those, what type of Kubernetes adopter are you? There are definitely those, we just did it. We had no idea what we were doing and we made all the mistakes along the way. And then there's the more conservative approach of like you're seeing, and I've seen several times where they chose Docker single instance servers and they started with one project at a time. And then eventually they got to the point where they're like, okay, I need a cluster. I might talk them into Swarm for a few minutes, depending on how much storage they might need. And then eventually they graduate to something like MicroKates. In fact, that same example, the financial client, that's exactly what they did. They started with a single Python app on a single Docker server. And then once they understood, and they had to learn a lot of new concepts. I mean, we didn't go full GitOps, but just the idea of infrastructure as code was actually a little new to them. And it's almost like they were adopting DevOps and containers and like agile infrastructure all at the same time, along with IO infrastructure as code and programmatically doing deployments rather than hand deployments. It's funny how sometimes people try to do it all at once, which is one of my big messages of like, when I used to get on stage when we were all first doing Docker, I think one of my big Docker talks, DockerCon talks, was talking about the same project rules still apply. Don't try to boil the ocean. Let's just do one thing at a time, maybe two things, but not all the things. You and I talked before the show about where your focuses are today. So where we talked about, I mean, on your website, there is a lot of different scenarios, and it sort of speaks to how Portainer can be used in so many different ways in so many different sizes or types of environments. And there's, you have a whole different industrial IoT and edge area of the website. So I was curious about the team's focus on, you know, exactly where the functionality and feature set of Portainer applies to IoT and edge. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So containers are dominating software deployments these days, right? If you're an ISV, if you're making software and selling it, everyone knows now that shipping as containers is the most cost-effective way of doing so. It's the easiest way to support. It removes this. It works on my machine, not yours. And it really does help reduce the cost of support if you ship software. Now, that is universal. So it doesn't matter if you're shipping software for business applications or you're shipping software that is running factory floor or IoT solutions, right? That's just now the behavior. And so if software vendors are shipping software as containers, how do people on the factory floor out there in a manufacturing sector, out industry, oil and gas, healthcare, you name it, they don't necessarily have the same level of IT depth of experience that people inside the data center do. And if we're honest, even inside the data center, there's a subset of that total workforce that can understand and comprehend containers. Well, when you get further out into industry, how do you do that as well? And because of Portainer's focus from day one on removing complexity, there's this natural alignment with what we call OT engineers, or the industry calls OT engineers, operational technology engineers. They find it organically easier to learn Portainer, to deploy container-based applications. And these are MQTT brokers or, you know, PLC control software, you know, data collection software. They find it easy to deploy these things on their lightweight devices out at the industrial edge using Portainer, just cost a bit of simplicity. So it's been organically successful in that regards. And now we are specifically creating capability in the product when you need to manage thousands, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of devices. How can you actually say, take this compose file or take this Kubernetes manifest and deploy it to 1,000 devices, go. And then how can you do that and say, okay, take this common file, deploy it to 1,000 devices, but each device is subtly different. So have a slight differential per environment. And so we're supporting that now. How do you easily onboard 1,000 remote Docker environments into Portainer essentially to manage them? So we're now adding capability specifically for fleet management, you know, large scale management of devices out there at the edge of the network.
I would say that 1,000 Docker nodes definitely qualifies as a fleet. That is definitely a fleet.
Yeah.
Hey, listeners, in this edited version of the show, we skipped the demo here. So if you want to check that out, then check out the live stream link in the show notes. Now back to the show. Who knew that I could use Portainer to replace my CyberDuck SFTP to 50 different nodes or whatever? Yeah, very cool. I definitely feel like we're just touching scratching the surface of that. And other than, okay, so IoT and edge, definitely a focus, it sounds like. What has the team been working on for the last couple of years that maybe people don't know about? I kind of went through some of the README. Of course, you have great READMEs about the releases, and I see, you know, swarm fixes in there and a lot of little, I mean, it's just like a ton of little enhancements, like little things like adding almost like quality of life enhancements. But can you think of anything over the last 2 years? I mean, I guess MicroKates deployments is one.
GitOps is another, absolutely. Yeah, GitOps, you know, a lot of times people thought of us as a kind of ClickOps UI. Yeah, we're a way of doing things with ClickOps. And that's, of course, the case. It, as you said before, right, if you're making the transition to containers, you can either take this massive leap and say, okay, we're going to go from VMs to containers. And at the exact same time, we're going to undergo some massive organizational shift and go to DevOps at the same time. So everything is code and that makes that leap huge. It's a huge leap. Yeah. Well, what happens if you're not, what happens if you're not ready for that? What happens if you actually just want to start to cut your teeth in containerization and not have to worry about how to write compose files or manifest or whatever else? And so that's why our ClickOps UI is still there, because there's actually a large number of people who simply value that experience whilst they learn the technology. And then eventually they will transition to code, which is why we now added that GitOps feature in Portainer. So yeah, adding GitOps was a really, really key undertaking for us. The cluster build, it was really important. The centralized RBAC was there for Docker Swarm. We brought that in. One of the other really cool things is that most people don't realize is Portainer is actually a full Kubernetes API proxy. When you actually have Portainer running and you've got multiple clusters, you can download a kubeconfig file from Portainer. You can put that onto your local machine and you can do your kubectl get configs, and you can see all of the clusters. Now, you're not talking to those clusters directly. You're talking to them through Portainer. So all of your clusters are not exposing the Kubernetes API externally. Portainer exposes it and securely proxies through to the backend automatically for you, which is a really cool way of managing multiple clusters or environments from one central place.
Yeah.
So this is actually a really, really cool little capability. And as you say, there's a lot of discrete tools that do this. And this is kind of the story of my life in Portainer is I'm not a fan of discrete tools. And so there's a lot of these discrete tool capabilities built in natively in Portainer. You just need Portainer to run your platform.
Yeah, I definitely did not know that existed. my goal today was to learn at least one thing that I'm definitely going to use a Portainer. That is pretty slick, especially for my home lab. I'm not currently running any dynasty, any companies with my content business here, but every once in a while I do take on consulting clients, and that they're often looking for some UI like this, and it's sort of my go-to. But I mean, between the microcase auto deployments, the CLI proxy, which is especially for companies where we just had Tailscale on the show a couple of months ago, like they're a company that hasn't adopted, I would say, modern VPNs that are a little more agile, a little more easier to get your developers to the places they need to be. Does that RBAC fall? I'm curious, by the way, does that proxy obey the RBAC rules? I'm guessing in Portainer itself?
The RBAC rules of Portainer are not even in Portainer. And we actually propagate those to the backend environment. So you're actually configuring the RBAC rules in Portainer and we're actually propagating them to Kubernetes. So we're actually doing roles and role bindings in the backend. So when you create a user in Portainer, or you configure Portainer to authenticate users from upstream, your Azure AD, whatever else, the moment a user logs into Portainer and is granted access to a cluster, we create a shadow user in that cluster. And then when you assign them a role, we do a role and role binding for that shadow user. So it's actually in the cluster. So yes, it absolutely obeys all of the configuration that you set.
Yeah. And it's funny because that one thing you just described is also multiple tools out there because very few people have just one Kubernetes cluster. But so one of the first things in a real job scenario is, okay, how do I give the people the necessary permissions to the different clusters and then manage that centrally, especially if I'm not someone who's a fan of like pure IAM AWS management or something like that, and I want something a little closer to the actual applications themselves. That's pretty slick. I feel like that's a mini demo in and of itself, is I can create a user here and it can be provisioned and managed, four different Kubernetes environments that I suddenly now give this person access to. Very cool. There's multiple entire products. That's their whole purpose, is to create a user once, have it show up on Kubernetes environments.
I'm a Kiwi, right? And so Lord of the Rings fan, and the one ring to rule them all, one product to rule them all. That's kind of the thing, right? Okay. So I want you to be able to come in the morning, log in to Portainer, and that's the only tool you need to use through the day to manage your platform, and you log off and you go home. That's kind of, if you have to open up another tool to do something inside your environment, Docker or Kubernetes, I've kind of failed. I want Portainer to be the tool you need to use.
Yeah, and that's pretty slick too. We all know the admins that will prefer a GUI, and the admins that, and I say admins, like it can be anyone, it can be a developer, that abhor a GUI, right? Like there's people that love K9S at the CLI for doing everything they can. They're NeoVim users. They're doing Dive for inspecting their images. They're doing everything in the CLI. So it's pretty cool how they can still take advantage of Portainer, even when there's someone who doesn't necessarily want all that GUI. Maybe that's GUI for other members of the team and they could just use their CLI. We had an earlier question that was very specific on passwords, interested in how you could handle secrets like database passwords and do they need to live somewhere? And I guess this sort of goes to a larger discussion that I wanted to ask about was one of the challenges I often have with people adopting containers is they maybe don't have a modern secrets manager. They maybe don't have a vault yet, right? And so they're still maybe in, I would call it sort of secret infancy, where they're still plugging secrets into specific systems. And they might have a cloud one, but it's probably not cohesive for everything. They're probably someone who's adopted 1Password or LastPass or something like that, Dashlane, whatever, but they've maybe not adopted it for their systems, for APIs and whatnot. So what are the secret capabilities, I guess, inside a Portainer?
I would say that's still fledgling. We have integrated with the Kubernetes secrets and Docker Swarm secrets, so we'll create those. At least, Docker Swarm, people you know, hate on it a lot, but you know, Docker Swarm secrets were quite secure. Once you created them, you couldn't see them unless they were presented to a container. Yeah, Kubernetes secrets, not so much. You can you know, retrieve them and see the secret in real time. So we help you create secrets. We also have, because we're a UI, we've created an overlay option which says behave a bit like Swarm. You know, once you create a secret, don't allow people to retrieve it. So we actually are blocking the API call to retrieve to view the secret. So that's a nice little enhancement. We probably need to do better and integrate with things like Vault or, you know, some other external secret manager in the future.
So you're saying that like the workflow now is like, if I have, let's say I have 3 Kubernetes clusters, can I input secrets manually into Portainer and then it deploys it to 3 different clusters? Or are we really just talking about me somehow getting it into the YAML that way?
It's in the YAML as a secret. You can use it from GitOps if you want. You can use on the edge feature, then using edge configurations, you can push out a secret to the device. So you can, you know, pre-deploy a secret out to the device. But for the vast majority of times, it would be in your YAML from GitOps.
Right. Yeah. Cause there, I mean, secrets, you know, like everyone does it differently, right? Like every customer I've looked at, every customer I've worked with, the way they handle secrets in the human part of secrets, right? Where do we store it? Who has access? Who controls the access? That's always a completely different setup. They're probably using different ways of different tools. Not everyone's using the same tools. I know in Kubernetes, my new favorite, which I'm not super versed in, but I was convinced at KubeCon last year to adopt the external secrets provider. The team did a lightning talk that tried to convince us of how theirs is like the superset of all secret providers. So for those of you out there looking for secrets in Kubernetes, external-secrets.io, I think is it. And it allows you to basically bring in all the other secret providers into sort of a universal control plane of secrets for Kubernetes. Of course, those of us in Swarm, we have easy mode because it just works and it's there. So I wanted to take that, so that talking about secrets, and it reminds me of personas. So one of the things that I have seen in certain UIs, and I'm just curious because I don't actually know this for Portainer, is that you tend to have like cluster operators and then application deployers, like people that are building the app typically only care about seeing their app and its health and maybe its deployment status. And then you have operators that care about node health, resource management, am I at capacity, that sort of thing. Is there anything in Portainer around separating those roles or allowing maybe a cluster operator to give only certain specific things to an application developer? Obviously, we have RBAC in the tool, but I was just curious if you had sort of like an application-focused view versus an infrastructure-focused view, because I think a lot of our conversations naturally lean to the infrastructure side because I'm an infrastructure person. You know, we've been in this game for a while, so infrastructure is our game. But is there anything in there like that for application developers?
Yeah, so out of the box, when you create a user in Portainer, you're either an admin or a user. If you're an admin, by that we mean infrastructure operator. If you're a user, by that we mean application user. There's the two personas. So when you create a user in Portainer and they're a user versus an admin, they don't see any of that cluster stuff. So all that stuff is 100% abstracted. And you are now operating from within the guardrails that the administrator sets. So any quotas or policies or anything else, all of that is actually built. You know, one of the things I didn't mention is, you know, we actually have full support to, you know, flick a switch, turn on OPA gatekeeper and deploy a bunch of OPA policies to the cluster. When the user is operating, in user mode, they have to abide by the OPA gatekeeper policies, any quotas or limits that the admin has set. So the admin is the persona to configure the environment. The user is now self-service, able to operate within the guardrails set by the admin out of the box.
Nice. So yeah, so it's there. It's by default. Perfect. We've got a couple of questions real quick. I know we're running up against time, but I want to make sure I help the people. All right. Asking about AI. So will AI take all the things you've explained until now? So we all have our own personal crystal balls when it comes to like, what is Gen AI going to do for our tool and our industry? Because Portainer's running on your environments, like if it was to have anything AI in it, it would have to run in the environments, right? So that's like problem number one is you're not a SaaS, like you said. You thought about that?
So you can actually go into settings in Portainer, turn on experimental features, and then we actually have a full AI engine built into Portainer. So you can already do that today.
All right. I did not expect that answer.
Yep. And you go into settings and you put in your OpenAI API key. And then all of a sudden you get a little bot and you can ask the bot questions. And the answers to those questions, like you can say, hey, I want to deploy WordPress in my environment. Now, behind the scenes, we will enrich that question with, well, you're asking that question on a Kubernetes environment and with this configuration. So then we will say to the AI backend, how to deploy WordPress on Kubernetes with persistent storage and a load balancer enriched for you. Then the response that we get back, if it's a YAML file, we'll give you to hit the button to say deploy this, and we'll just immediately grab that code and we'll deploy that code and have the application running for you.
All right.
Again, it's an experimental feature. Sure. That people like it. Do they load it? Who knows? It's there.
It sounds akin to the Stack Overflow copy and paste and deploys.
But yeah. It's exactly that, right? Yeah. Except it's actually enriched questioning. By the way, some of these things I mentioned, MicroKates as well, this is in Portainer Business Edition. In the free, you can get a free license of Portainer Business Edition. This is all in there. So not the Portainer CE version. It's in Portainer Business Edition, the freemium license or paid. Many, many, many people out there, home users, have switched to our freemium license just because it's so feature rich.
Yeah. So explain that real quick. So we have Portainer CE, which is the open source community edition, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have BE. I see that in the website. And there's even a blog post that was from you all on explaining the difference between CE and BE. But what you're talking about, correct me if I'm wrong, is the for home users, they can apply for a business license for home use. Is that right?
Yeah. So you fill in a form online. It takes seconds and you'll get a license for your free forever for three nodes to run. If you need more than three nodes, and some of us do, we even actually have a home and student license, $149 a year for 15 nodes. Then it basically gives you all of the commercial features for free, or not for free, but it's free for three. But otherwise, we give you all those commercial features for use at home, and you can learn, experiment, and become proficient with all of this GitOps and containerized management and policy management and everything you want to do to help you with your career.
All right. I have one last question. Can I use traffic for the ingress? Our Discord community, we've been talking about traffic, and I'm just curious if traffic supports Kubernetes inside of Portainer. Doesn't Portainer have like, can't you install add-ons, or doesn't it have like a menu of options you can install different common things like traffic with a couple of clicks?
Well, that's MicroKates, yes. So if you're using MicroKates, you can add the traffic add-on for ingress and it'll deploy it and you can use it.
Right. Right.
Portainer, the UI helper, talks to the ingress API. And so as long as you have installed an ingress controller in the cluster, we can manage it, be that Nginx or traffic or anything else, we can manage it absolutely. So we've got customers who use the traffic ingress today in Kubernetes, and it's completely fine. By far, the vast majority of the world, I think 90% of ingress deployments are Nginx. I think that's an amazing stat. But yes, we support Nginx and traffic and others as ingress controllers.
Having had both of those teams on the show in the last year, I am also a traffic fan, technically a traffic ambassador, but it is always amazing to me how many, like to me, the Nginx is a perfect example of good enough by default. Like it is the only one that's officially supported by the Kubernetes project in terms of just an example load balancer, but so many people still use it. And there's all these other ones that are more cloud native, that are custom. We've got Envoy and Contour and Traffic and Solo and all that, but people still keep using the Nginx, which I'm always amazed by, because Nginx doesn't actually know anything about Kubernetes itself. It's not natively cloud aware or Kubernetes aware, but yet it's used everywhere. It's just such a
It just
works.
Success
story for them. Yeah, it's a success story for them, really.
Yeah.
All right. I'm just going to ask you this question because I love to ask this at the end before we're done. Is what's next? Like, what do we have to look forward to? What little teasers can you give us for 2024? What news can I break about Portainer on this show?
We've actually just finished surveying our users of Portainer Business because we are about to start, or we have started, the imagination phase, is how I describe it, for what will be Portainer version 3. And, you know, that's going to be something that's later in the year, but we are going to be dramatically rethinking the experience. You know, we want it to be more conversational UI. You know, that seems to have been how people are now starting to engage with technology a lot more, is conversational. It's definitely going to be a code first experience, and we're going to sort of redefine or refine what it means to run Portainer and how it's going to deliver you an easy experience. Yeah, there's a lot of focus right now on serverless containers and that serverless experience of cloud run. And so how do we provide that type of experience as well, where you simply don't care about the infrastructure. You ask Portainer to deploy something, and based on metadata, we will make the right decisions for you and deploy the application. So that's kind of where we're thinking the future is going to be.
Interesting. All right. Well, I'm hoping to have some LLM shows here this year. So that sounds like maybe something that's in your future. Speaking of the AI world and all that that's doing for us. But I think for me, you know, one, I don't know why I'm not using it in my home cluster in the closet. That's a mistake on my part. Apologies to everyone, and including my closet, for not doing that. And two, I'm excited about the deployment options now. I mean, because one of the things that I've used Rancher for in the past is that deployment workflow, and not necessarily been someone who's all in on Rancher, but the UI experience, at least of deploying, is a little less tedious than trying to figure out a kubeadmin configuration file and all that stuff. So the idea is that I can now deploy MicroKates or some of the cloud products, because if you've ever tried to deploy those, you realize, like you said, they're not easy. They're not simple. In fact, I think that's one of Corey Quinn's biggest complaints about EKS on AWS is like, who designed this? There's 1,000 choices and how would you even know all the answers to these questions? I don't know all the answers to these questions. It's not even obvious. So I'm always excited to see some other tool trying to simplify that for us. Because if we've deployed Kubernetes today, we're going to have to deploy another one. Like, there's always more Kubernetes coming. If you're a kubeadmin or a cluster admin, you are well aware that however many you thought you were going to have, you're going to end up with more. And it's going to grow kind of like VMs did, I feel like, 15 years ago when we were like in VM bloat. We were just making more VMs than we could possibly handle in the data center. And then we all had to come up with tools to actually manage all of that. I feel like we're in that world right now with Kubernetes, where instead of the one large deployment that we're all going to have, like this giant production that's spanning regions and, you know, hybrid and blah, 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 I'm seeing a lot more of the smaller cluster deployments with centralized tooling to manage all of them wherever they're at. So this definitely feels like it's part of the trend for the future, and I'm excited to dig into it. All right, of course, I should just say portainer.io, go download. It's free. It's on GitHub. Uh-huh. You can get a community license like you just talked about. If you want to actually have more of the business features, you can get a home license or whatever. I'm sure I'm saying those words wrong. But Neil, how can people find you and ask more questions about Portainer?
I am very free and open with my email address. It's just neil@portainer.io. And I always respond to emails. I spend a lot of time traveling and I have a lot of spare time to respond to emails. So email me. I'm on our community Slack channel. So if you jump on our community Slack channel. And often I am the person responding to, I keep saying tweets, but that's kind of showing it. Our X is now. So if you X
we're all
me,
still tweeting.
Oh my God.
We're all still tweeting. And, yeah. Unless you're on Mastodon, and then it's tooting.
And yes, I'm on LinkedIn and I accept all LinkedIn invites. So if you find me on LinkedIn, I look very much like my persona. So if you find me on LinkedIn, then I will accept your invite and chat with you.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much again for being here. Like every other time, I learn more about Portainer that I should have known already when you're on the show. And I'm looking forward to we coming back on, talking about a new experimental project, as well as we just might want to plan now, maybe not this year, but when the V3 releases, like definitely getting a show on the big reveal of that's such a huge lift. I'm both excited and nervous for you, because I know how much a rethinking of everything you just did is, how much work that is and how much effort that's involved with getting people on board with that and getting it working. So thanks, Neil. We'll see you soon on the internet.
Appreciate it. See you, Russ.
See you. Thanks for listening. I'll see you in the next one.